It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickert is out today. Coming up on Wisconsin Life, we'll meet a button collector and ask you to share your interesting or odd collections. First, today's the anniversary of the passage of the Endangered Species Act in 1973. There have been some environmental successes that were achieved because of the protections that it gives, but analysts also say that in some areas the law hasn't had the hoped-for impact. Peter Alagona is an associate professor in the Environmental Studies and History Departments at the University of California, Santa Barbara. He's the author of the book After the Grizzly, Endangered Species and the Politics of Place in California. Peter, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hi, Rob. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you as well. Well, when we're evaluating the impact of the Endangered Species Act, it seems like people don't always agree on how to measure it. Are we measuring it based on species we kept from going extinct, species we returned to a sustainable population, or species we restored to their original levels? Is there agreement on what success looks like?
That's a great question, Rob. The answer is no, there isn't agreement, and that explains a lot of the debate that surrounds the law today. If you look at the Endangered Species Act today, there have been around 1,600 species listed since its passage, about 42 years ago, actually exactly 42 years ago today. About 700 of these are animals, about 900 plant species. The state with the greatest number is Hawaii, because that's a particular case of a devastated flora and fauna there. But endangered species are listed all over the country. If you look nationwide, only about 1% of the species that have been listed since the act was passed in 1973 have gone extinct. But only about 2% of those that have been listed have recovered to the point where they can be removed from the act and declared no longer endangered. So what this means is it leaves about 97% of the species that have ever been listed still considered endangered today, and that's the source of a lot of the debate that you hear in the news.
Well, the question would be, this has just been 42 years in a process of extinction that might have been going on for a century or maybe centuries. Is this too short a time horizon to think of a success or failure?
Well, that's certainly one of the critiques that many supporters of the Act offer. Many of the species that have been listed over the past four-plus decades now were in a pretty bad way by the time they actually fell under federal protection. And so to recover them could take many years. It could involve complicated changes to management and policy. And even under the best of circumstances, I think that many species that took decades to decline will take decades to recover. On the other hand, however, many people point out that some of the species that have had the most attention and the most resources dedicated to their conservation under the law are still continuing to decline. And so this is a great concern, and it brings up questions about where we should best spend our money and what's the best way to really achieve the goals that have been set out under the ESA that many people, I think, in this country really still value and support today.
Now, I've read elsewhere that you say one concern with the Endangered Species Act is that it was locked into place in 1972 as a federal program with all the bureaucratic details that involves. Since then, we've learned things, but the flexibility to take what we've learned and apply it may not be there. How do you see that playing out?
I think that's really correct. And a lot of folks who are responsible for administering the Act in the Fish and Wildlife Service and in the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration have asked for greater flexibility under the Act to do something that scientists and managers call adaptive management. Basically, what adaptive management means is it means learning by doing. You try something out, you see if it works. If it works, that's great. If it doesn't work, you've learned something and you can move forward with a new strategy. The Endangered Species Act does provide some ability to do that, some ability to do adaptive management, but because of many of the restrictions under the Act, some of those opportunities have been lost or not taken, and so I think that we could do a whole lot better in that way. We also know a lot from a range of scientific studies and studies in the law and history and a variety of other fields over many years that could also be applied to the Act if we could find a way to improve it through amendments. But the proposed amendments over the years have generally, I think, not sought to improve the Act in ways that would make it more effective. Instead, they've tried to water down the Act in ways that would probably make it less effective but make it more streamlined for folks that have problems with it.
We'll get more into that issue in a moment, but the idea of having maybe an experimental population is the fear, maybe the reason we don't do more of that is, okay, we've got this species with limited numbers. We don't want to take any chances. We don't want to experiment and risk losing a part of an already small population.
That's absolutely a part of it, certainly. There is a mechanism under the Endangered Species Act for what's called scientific take. And what that basically means is that you can potentially get a permit to do a project that experiments with a listed species if it's warranted for scientific or conservation purposes and if it doesn't pose a significant threat to the persistence of the species. So this kind of thing is allowed, but as you can imagine, many of the folks who are responsible for administering the act and see themselves as the sort of last backstop for many of these species that are really on the brink of extinction have been fairly unwilling in many cases to do this because they're concerned that any actions could lead to the further decline of these plants and animals.
Talking about the Endangered Species Act with Peter Alagona from the University of California, Santa Barbara. I want to talk about the politics and the disagreements over the act that you referred to a few moments ago, Peter. As I understand it, this act passed the Senate with no votes against it, which is hard to imagine environmental legislation, now passing unanimously in effect. But very soon it became a source of great controversy. Was there something that they did wrong in passing this act that didn't take into account the conflicts that were going to arise?
Well, that's a great story and a really great question as well. You know, laws trying to protect fish and wildlife in this country actually go back many decades, at least to the mid-19th century. The federal government got involved in 1900 with the first federal law on behalf of fish and wildlife, the Lacey Act. And so the Endangered Species Act is really the culmination, in many ways, of three-quarters of a century of congressional federal legislation on behalf of wildlife in the United States. As you said, the Endangered Species Act passed in 1973 by a vote of 390-12 in the House and a 92-0 voice vote in the Senate, and then was signed by Republican President Richard Nixon. Now, I don't think that this was a mistake or a lack of foresight necessarily, but what I do think is at that time, in that context of 1973, there was a tremendous amount of bipartisan support behind the idea of environmental protection and behind the idea of endangered species protection in particular. Just a tremendous amount. It wasn't really until the late 1970s, 5, 6, 7 years later, and early 1980s, when the country began to turn more politically conservative and to turn away from some of that legislative activism of the 1960s and 70s, that the ESA, the Endangered Species Act, became a symbol of these laws of an earlier period, and there was a backlash against it. So the Endangered Species Act was part of a much larger history of legislative activism in the 60s and 70s, and then a sort of backlash against that in the 1980s. What I will say, though, is that throughout the history of endangered species conservation in this country, public opinion polls have consistently shown that despite the often divisive politics, people tend to be broadly behind the idea of preserving endangered species and doing what we can to keep them around, because this is a long-term proposition, not a short one that should be governed by political cycles.
Now, a lot of the conflicts you mentioned seem to involve government restrictions on what people can do with land for personal or economic purposes. Again, I've read elsewhere that you say there are a lot of opportunities for cooperation between landowners, private business landowners, also state agencies for that matter, and federal regulators on the Endangered Species Act. Could we be doing more along those lines? What kind of things could we do?
You know, the idea of trying to enroll and incentivize private landowners in more conservation programs goes back all the way to the 1930s. And one of the primary proponents of that was a Wisconsin native, Aldo Leopold, who in the 1930s wrote that private landowners needed to be more incentivized and more brought into conservation programs in a way that benefited them and also benefited the other species involved. So this idea has been around a long time. We have some very good programs, both under the Endangered Species Act itself and at the state level in many states, but oftentimes these have been underused, And I think it's just a tremendous opportunity to bring more people into the fold and to bring into line interests that are already there. I think that most landowners, farmers, ranchers, and others are greatly concerned about conservation. They want biological diversity, healthy ecosystems. The ones I talk to here in California tell me that all the time. But they're concerned that some of the laws that they see on the books actually get in the way of them doing that. And so how can we make these laws, how can we make the ESA more responsive to their interests and their needs while also bringing them more into the fold of conservation? I think we've got some models out there, but I think we really need to build on them in the future.
Supposing Congress, I guess, takes another look at the Endangered Species Act, do you think that positive changes like that would be the result? Or are you worried about, opening up a Pandora's box and having a lot of revisions that weaken the act overall?
Well, that has certainly been the concern over the past few decades. Many folks who are supportive of the Endangered Species Act have seen attempts to amend the act over the past couple decades as endangering the act itself, not just the species it aims to conserve. And so that's been a political concern of many folks in Washington and elsewhere who want to see this act continue into the future and continue along the lines it's been going, doing good work on behalf of many species. But what I would say is that if you look at history, if you look at American conservation history, there have really been three periods in which most of our laws have been passed to protect species and to protect ecosystems and to protect our environment. The Progressive Era during the late 19th and early 20th centuries, the New Deal era of the 1930s, and then the post-war era of the 1960s and 70s. And so what I often tell folks is that we need to be working to try to figure out better solutions to the problems that endangered species face today so that when the stars align out there in the political world, that we have good ideas and good solutions to real problems that can be put into action, knowing that the political stars will not always be aligned. And they certainly have not been over the past couple decades.
As we wrap up, Peter, speaking of that history, you're in kind of a unique position as someone who studies environmental sciences and history. Do we pay enough attention to our history of conservation and endangered species protection in the U.S.? Is there a lot more we could learn from what we've been doing over the last century plus?
Yes.
All right. That's a good place.
Actually, if I could take 1 second, Rob,
sure.
I would just say absolutely yes, yes, yes. We have a tremendous amount to learn from the mistakes we've made, from the success stories that we do have, and there are some conservation success stories out there that we can point to. There will be more in the coming years, and so telling those stories in a way that's compelling, that can be empowering to people to understand how we can build on these success stories, I think is incredibly important. I will also say, though, that the future of conservation may look very different from the past. And what I mean by that is that we're encountering new challenges today and in the future that will require really wholly new ways of thinking about conservation. These include climate change, for example, we all know about that, but also the advent of synthetic biology, which gives us the opportunity, or perhaps the challenge, I would say, of figuring out how to use techniques that allow us to alter organisms in ways that could fundamentally change what we think of as being natural, but might also give us new opportunities to conserve species that we value and that we always have. So history is a tremendous guide. It can give us wisdom, can give us a sense of how we've gotten to where we're at, but we also need a lot of good conservation, a lot of good science, and a lot of good, talented folks on the ground to figure out how to address these other problems in the future.
Peter, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob.
That's Peter Alagona. He's Associate Professor in the Environmental Studies and History Departments at the University of California, Santa Barbara. He's the author of the book After the Grizzly, Endangered Species and the Politics of Place in California. He joins us to talk about the history and future of the Endangered Species Act. It was signed into law on this day in 1973.